Chapter 13. Majid Returns. Marcus waited nervously at Heathrow Airport's gate 32 as a crowd of tired brown faces from BA Flight 261 came towards him, turning at the last moment to meet aunts, drivers, children and airline workers. "You are Mr. Chalfin." Meeting minds. Marcus lifted his head to look at the tall, young man standing in front of him. It was Milat's face, but it was cleaner and somehow younger. The hair was soft and brushed forward in the English schoolboy way. His clothes were white and well made. Yes, of course, they were twins. Marcus could see that Majid had Milat's big nose and large feet, and this strangely disappointed him. But Marcus could see who Majid was really like. How had Majid recognised Marcus so easily from all the people waiting? Majid and Marcus, Marcus and Majid. "Yes, Majid, we finally meet," cried Marcus. "I feel as if I know you already." "Well, I do, but then again, I don't. But how did you know it was me?" Majid gave him a huge smile. "Well, dear Marcus," he replied, "you were the only white man waiting at gate 32. Majid's return shook the Iqbal family. "I don't recognize him," Alsana whispered to Clara. "This is not an Iqbal. He brushes his teeth 6 times a day and irons his underpants. I don't want to touch him because he's so clean and English. It's like sitting down to breakfast with Prince Charles." Milat immediately said that he did not want to meet his twin, and Joyce and Irie were also unsure of him. They had loved the one brother so well for so many years, it was like another actor had come to play him with a similar haircut. And Samad was not happy at all. He would have hidden the boy away forever, locked him under the stairs or sent him to Greenland. He did not want his relatives to see this English boy with his smart English suits and his intellectual novels. The only good thing was the change in Alsana. "Yes, Samad, it is in the kitchen. That's where it is, yes." The first time she did it, he nearly died from shock. No more "maybe Samad," no more "possibly Samad." Now it was "yes, yes, yes," "no, no, no." It was wonderful, but it was not enough. His sons had let him down, and he felt great shame. If aunts and uncles phoned, he simply lied. "Milat? He is in Birmingham, working at the mosque." "Majid? Yes, he is marrying a good Bengali girl. Yes, a very good young man." Irie was not happy either. Her work for Marcus, which began 9 months before as light filing, had now hugely increased. Majid was helping Marcus now, and he was getting the media interested in Marcus's future mouse project. Suddenly, Irie was having to receive and make lots of calls. Marcus was paying her the same money as a secretary. But that was the problem. She was a secretary, but Majid was a trusted student. Because of Milat, Majid was now living with the Chalfins. He went with Marcus on trips and watched him in the laboratory. He was the golden child, the chosen one. He was very clever and very nice and kind. He had helped Marcus with his arguments and taken him by the hand out into the light where people could see his work. Joyce, of course, was happy to have another beautiful young man to look after. She was very worried about Milat at the moment because he had missed his counsellor's appointment 4 days ago and had not been seen since. "Look," she said to Irie in the kitchen one afternoon, "the most important thing is that I get Milat and Majid to speak to each other. It's time." Irie looked unsure. "Why is it time?" she asked. "Because they need each other. Both these boys have problems and it's not helped by Milat not wanting to see Majid. They have grown up with different religions in different countries. Can you imagine how they feel? But if they don't want to speak, then they don't want to, replied Irie. And anyway, why don't you worry about your own family for a change? When's the last time you saw Josh? Joyce gave her a strange look. Josh is in Glastonbury. Right. Glastonbury finished 2 months ago, Joyce. He said that he was going to do a bit of travelling. And who's he with? Asked Irie. You don't know anything about those people. Why don't you worry about that for a while? Anyway, Majid is fine. He's working with Marcus and he's happy. Irie, please, said Joyce, sitting next to the phone, because she was hoping that Milat would call. Josh just wants us to notice him, just like you want me to notice you at this moment. The truth is that Milat is going to get into terrible trouble with these Kevin people, and I know it's worrying Majid. They're both damaged and need help, and I plan to give it to them. Joyce wanted to help them so much that she called on the Iqbal's house the following week. 5 minutes, said Alsana, opening the door. Joyce entered, and the two of them looked at each other like fighters as Alsana made her some tea. There was no choice of tea in the Iqbal's house. Mrs. Iqbal, started Joyce, I know we haven't agreed in the past. I only have one rule, Mrs. Chalfin, said Alsana angrily. Do not involve yourself in other people's families. You think I am involving myself? Asked Joyce. I think you have involved yourself. But I just want the twins to see each other. But you are the reason they are apart, replied Alsana, putting milky brown tea in front of Joyce. But Majid is only living with us because Milat won't live with him here, replied Joyce, and Majid says that your husband hates him. Milat is very damaged. At this, Alsana began to shout. And why can't he talk to Milat? Because you and your husband have involved him in something that is so wrong in our religion, we cannot even recognize him. He and his brother will never agree now. Those awful Kevin people. They think they are good Muslims, following Allah, but they are just a bad gang, and they are giving out leaflets about your husband and his mouse. I found them under his bed. Alsana took a leaflet from her pocket and threw it across the table at Joyce. Take it, lady. Take it and show it to Majid. Show him what you have done. Two boys driven to opposite ends of the world. You have made a war for my sons. Why don't you go back to your family and leave mine alone? You think life is easy at my house, replied Joyce, and then she began to cry a little. Joshua isn't speaking to Marcus. Did you know that? That mouse is hurting us too. I'm trying to help all of us, and the best way to start is to get Majid and Milat talking before things get any worse. If we could just find a quiet place for them both to meet, I'm sure things would get better. Couldn't we ask Irie to help us? A quiet place. It was difficult to think of one, but finally Joyce had an idea. There was a room in a college near the River Thames that she used on Friday afternoons and that she knew was always empty between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. Joyce gave the room key to Irie. But why me? Cried Irie. I'm not involved. Exactly, dear, replied Joyce. And I'm too involved. You are perfect because you know them both. Irie took the key and walked out onto the streets that she knew so well. She passed the park where she and Milat had ridden bikes as children and where he had once kissed her in the middle of a storm. Then she jumped over the wall around the Iqbal house like she had a million times before and rang the bell. Upstairs in his bedroom, Milat had spent the last 15 minutes on his prayer mat with a Kevin leaflet in his hand, trying to pray properly. He was frustrated and his body was sweating. "Fingers must be closed and next to the ears," read the leaflet. "The head must be between the hands." At that moment, I re-entered and quickly explained to him about the room and the meeting with Majid. She talked to him about Joyce's worries and about making peace, and then she came up and put the cold key in his hand. Without meaning to, she slightly touched his chest, and suddenly their arms were around each other and they were falling on the floor and having sex. Then, as quickly as they had started, they had finished. Irie put her clothes on quickly and began to cry because she could already see how much Milat regretted it. At the same time, Milat quickly got back on his prayer mat and put his hands next to his ears. This time, he prayed perfectly. Irie walked straight round to the Chalfonces. She was angry, but not with Milat. Milat did not love her, and she thought that he did not love her because he could not love her. He was damaged because Majid had been born first by 2 minutes. Milat was the lesser son because of Majid. Irie wanted Majid to be the second son for once, this time by 25 minutes. She walked straight into Majid's room, put her arms around him, then made love to him angrily and without any conversation. She pushed him around roughly and pulled his hair hard. But when they had finished, she knew that she had not won. Majid had known immediately where she had been and why she was here, and it just made him sad. For a long time, they lay together without speaking. "It seems to me," Majid said finally, "that you have tried to love a man as if he were an island you found when lost in your boat. You wanted to mark the land with an X, but I think it is too late for all that." Then he kissed her on the head, and she began to cry like a baby.